From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Bayview Hunters Point.
Hayward.
Piedmont, California.
Pleasanton.
Fall Town.
Richmond.
Sunset.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Coming up, we'll hear about a new way community colleges are helping students graduate.
We decided together to try to work with other colleges to rethink our approach to incoming students.
Then we'll hear a story about a veteran who cares for fellow vets at the end of their lives.
Every time I go into a home, I see a piece of my family. I see a grandma and a grandpa that need help.
And we'll learn the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
I am very pleased to welcome to the stage the Grande Dame of Meow Mix, Ferocia Titty.
Get ready, Cross Currents is coming up. California has one of the largest community college systems in the country, with more than 2 million students. But its graduation rates are less than stellar. Last year, only 12% of community college students graduated with a degree in 2 years, and only 4% were able to transfer within 2 years. Research shows that what trips up these students is remedial courses. But a new coalition of professors is trying out a strategy to fix that, and it's raising some questions about what a community college education is all about. Sarah Tan reports.
Meet Sam Queso. He's a handler at a doggy daycare in West Oakland.
This is Chiquita. Come on, Chiquita.
But Queso is also an artist. He dreams of getting an art degree and eventually moving to New York City and leaving these dogs in his past. Right now, though, he's stuck. He's been attending Berkeley City College for 8 years, trapped in a cycle of remedial courses. Like a lot of his peers, Queso failed a math placement test. That meant he had to take remedial courses before he could take the classes required for graduation. Queso just put it off.
It was just like, always, I'll do it next time. And it was never, like, really, I don't think I would have ever have wanted to take elementary algebra again.
He says he's never had an easy time with math, and he worried. If this is what was required to graduate, would he be in City College forever?
It was just like fear and dread of like this amorphous amount of time that I was going to have to delay like ever being able to transfer.
But this past summer, his college advisor told him about an accelerated remedial class, one that teaches only the math needed to get into Statistics 101.
Yeah, you need to compare.
And then the association is strong, right? You have a strong association?
Because there's a difference.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now, he's in one of the few sections of pre-statistics offered at Berkeley City College.
We're 33 out of 40 females or thought they were good multitaskers. I'll call those MTs. All right. Did anybody write it or say it any differently?
Daniel Najjar teaches this course. He says for students not looking to major in science or math, knowing abstract algebra concepts isn't necessary.
Factor a polynomial, x squared plus 3x plus 5, factor that. Purely abstract things. That example I gave you is something they don't need to know how to do in statistics.
And drilling remedial algebra might actually turn some students off.
When you throw up the polynomial, oh yeah, they saw that in eighth grade or ninth grade. It's back again.
Beverly Escobar Sudario has been in and out of Community College of San Francisco for over a decade. This past summer, she took an accelerated remedial math course.
I just like how now it's like you only need this and you have all the support. It just gives you see kind of the light at the end of the tunnel, like I'm almost there.
She's on track to graduate this spring. She says, unlike the traditional remedial courses, the accelerated ones feel relevant to her life.
Felt maybe because I'm older, but now it's not like we're just taking this math class just to graduate, but it's also a math class that, hey, we're learning how to understand things and we might not use it now, but we might use it later on in life. It's just not a sense like we're just taking this class just because to get it over with, but I think he's trying to help and help apply things in our everyday life.
These accelerated courses come out of a coalition of community college professors called the California Acceleration Project. Co-founder Katie Hearn.
more remedial classes equals lower completion, guaranteed. And Myra helped me understand that. So we decided together to try to work with other colleges to rethink our approach to incoming students so that they weren't getting stuck in these layers of remedial courses and basically just bleeding out of college.
Hearn teaches a remedial English class at Chabot College. Instead of drilling grammar and sentence structure, she assigns students critical essays.
It's not this linear thing where you have to know all your grammar terminology before you can write a sentence, and then you have to write sentences for a semester before you can write a paragraph. It's sort of throwing that whole assumption out the window and saying, no, they're capable. They're capable, but maybe they haven't had a lot of practice.
But this method can be controversial. Even though the California Acceleration Project works with about two-thirds of the state's community colleges, some professors worry the method could go too far. Here's Shoshana Ten.
My concern is not so much on graduation rates as on the quality of education. I think a lot of students are just focused on degrees, and so the colleges are now focused on degrees.
She also teaches English at Chabot.
I just worry that, you know, like a high school degree is not, or a high school diploma is not what it used to be in America. I think a lot of people understand that. I think a two-year degree is not what it used to be either. I think pretty soon it's going to be a bachelor's degree. Okay, you've got a bachelor's degree. I don't know if you can really write. You know, you better have a graduate degree before we believe you can write. And so as we pump more students through, but reduce the quality, reduce the bar and the standards, how does that serve people in the long run?
She says she's here to educate students, not just hand out diplomas.
We're not here offering hamburgers, trying to make them cheaper and faster and get more, you know, kids their burgers. Quality education takes time. I mean, I could pass all my students tomorrow if that's what they want, right? I can take every student in my class and say, hey, you don't need to do any work. Let me just give you all a passing grade, and they could get their degree. But what is that worth?
But proponent Katie Hearn says these accelerated remedial courses don't reduce instructional quality. They refocus priorities for students.
When we give them a pre-statistics course or put them into statistics with co-requisite support, that they're getting a really rich and meaningful education in statistics, which is very relevant to all of our lives, and that's the math that we should have them focus on. And it's not a lowering of standards, it's just a clarity about which math is going to be most useful to students.
California isn't alone in rethinking remediation. In Colorado, Indiana, Tennessee, and West Virginia, some schools have stopped remedial classes altogether, placing students directly into college-level classes with the help of an aide or tutor. The program in California is pretty new, so there's not a lot of data. But according to the California Acceleration Project, students in accelerated classes finished required courses at up to four times the rate of students in traditional remedial courses. And for students like aspiring artist Sam Queso, programs like this could be his way out.
My goals right now are just to finish because I've been stuck in community college for years, going in and out. And I would eventually like to transfer, but for right now, I'm just really focused on finishing, which is why I really appreciate this class, because I would have to take like years more of math if this wasn't here.
He hopes to graduate in June, transfer to a four-year college, and get that art degree he's always wanted. For Cross Currents, I'm Sarah Tan.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Navy veteran Ron Ikaika Rivera Jr. says when you first see him and all his tattoos, you see a...
Oh, big bad, you know, scary-looking Hell's Angel guy.
But if you look closer, the ink tells a different, much more surprising story. Rivera is a retired corpsman, which is what the Navy calls its medics. In this edition of StoryCorps, Rivera sat down with his friend, fellow retired Army medic Jason Deitch, for a conversation about love, devotion, and service in the lives of veterans.
So tell me who Ron Rivera was before he became a soldier.
My dad's a Hawaiian. My mom's of Irish descent, so I'm kind of like the first American generation of my family. I grew up in various locations of the East Bay. It was tough. It was tough being poor growing up. You know, it was tough not having things. I had a phenomenal grandfather and grandmother that were more like my parents than anything. They always took care of me. I mean, I was lucky to have that in my life. They both worked at Mother's Cookies in Oakland. He was a truck driver, but never really spoke too much. Taught me how to hunt, taught me how to fish, taught me how to shoot, taught me how to live my life. My grandfather never swam without jeans on because of the shrapnel in his legs and his back. He was an Inchon Marine. Didn't talk about it except for to his best friend in the world, Jack, which was his corpsman, which had pulled him out. And for years, my grandfather never said anything about Korea until I came back home. When I came back home, Grandpa grabbed me and he took me downstairs at their house and he busted out everything he had from his chest. He kept this for years. He didn't share this with his, he had three boys and two girls. He didn't share this with them. He didn't share this with my grandmother. And he busted it out. And I never seen my grandfather drink before. He and I killed a six pack. I mean, it was crazy. And the man told me all about what happened. Then he showed me scars on his legs. And then he gave me his EGAs and he gave me his medals. And that day was more important than any day of my life that anything was given to me in the military.
You are a nurse now, right? Would you consider going off and becoming a nurse, your transition back into the civilian world?
No, because I went to Napa Valley College and got stuck at Napa State Hospital running a veterans group. I can't get away from my vets, man. So we walked over to Napa State Hospital. We walk in and there's all these vets wandering around like total PTSD, like screwed up, like crazy screwed up though. And we're like, hey, you know, we're ready to go. You guys, let's have a group. And nobody had ever been able to stay there very long because these guys would throw stuff at them or some crap would start off. The orderlies would get involved. And the guys looked at us and said, hey, were you in the military? I go, yeah. They goes, what did you? I was a corpsman. The guy goes, oh, I was a Marine in Vietnam. I'm like, oh, okay. Boom. We're all sitting down in a group. Like for like 16 weeks, we ran this group. And just, I'm not a fucking therapist. Yeah. I was a doc, you know, and we just sat there talking. And that's all we did was talk. They smoked and joked and everything else, but it was like the calmest. And that meant so much to me to see these guys go from an element of just absolute, the world did not care about them, but to stick them in this place. Yeah. And the world just thought that they didn't have any value.
You did work while you were going through nursing school, obviously, with vets, right? Yeah. And then now you do end-of-life care, hospice care, for veterans at the end of their life. You, in a text to me, you summed it up in amazing words. You said, I help the brothers get ready for their last deployment or something.
Absolutely. It's just like getting to the door again, man. Your first jump, your first door you're going to kick in, your first dynamic entry, whatever, bro. You got to be, that's a f***ing scary door, dude. Yeah. That's a hot door. I lost my grandmother to hospice, and that's when I became a hospice nurse. Every time, it's a little bit of selfishness too. Yeah. Even though it's, this would cross every palliative care and whatever boundary, and every nurse would be clenching their fists at me right now. Every time I go into a home, I see a piece of my family. I see a grandma and a grandpa that need help. I see how my grandparents passed. I see how my aunt and uncle may pass. So the gratification I get at helping people in their moment of absolute f-ing chaos, their loved ones dying, they're freaking out, and it's just pandemonium in there, I can fix that. It's being able to empower them and their families to make that decision. I want to die at home, bro. I don't want to die in no sterile f-ing hospital bed. I didn't want my brothers dying in f-ing dirt. Yeah. You just don't do that.
What it sounds like to me is you found your service. You found service. You did it. You figured out a way to do it. Maybe you weren't like, you know, plotting all of this stuff, but your body, the way your character is, the way your mind is built, the way you see the world, the way you design yourself, right? How your gut dictates to you where you go, right? You built it. Your life has been a life of service of one kind or another, but always of service.
Can't help it.
You're not supposed to, bro.
That was Jason Deitch and Ron Rivera. Their interview was recorded at a StoryCorps booth at the Concord Vet Center. It was part of a photography exhibit on the relationship between veterans and their tattoos. The piece was produced by KALW's Kovalroot Singh. Go to KALW.org and click Cross Currents for more from StoryCorps. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Julie Kane.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
I am very pleased to welcome to the stage the Grande Dame of Meow Mix, Ferocia Titty.
The vibe in general is lovely, but Tuesdays are a particularly special evening.
Didn't you guys love her makeup?
I think you know where we recorded that? For the answer, we're going to join reporter Meredith Hodnott for a night at one of Soma's historic gay bars.
Are you ready for your first act? I saw a hint of this act. I don't think you're ready, but the show has to start, so we're going to do it anyway.
Magnolia Black greets us from the small stage at the end of the bar in a form-hugging velvet dress. Gold and red sequin curtains wave behind her, and a disco ball spins overhead.
I can sit and stare and watch that all damn day.
Magnolia is one of the hosts of the Red Hots Variety and Cabaret Show that performs in bars around San Francisco. Acrobats flip over a stationary bike, dancers strut with feathers and tassels, and Magnolia belts out a bluesy version of a 90s hit.
I like the way you work it. I got to bag it up. I like the way you work it.
This is the scene early on a Friday night at The Stud. But this bar is a chameleon. Drag shows, karaoke, dancing, cabaret. Visit The Stud on a different night, and you're likely to find a whole different crowd.
It's a local bar, right? But it's also very specific on each night of the week. There's a different thing happening, often with a different scene.
This is Micah Sigourney, who performs in drag as Vivian Forevermore at The Stud.
There's something really DIY and like queer about The Stud. Like it's like a living room that hosts different gatherings, right?
It has this very quirky, quaint, feel. It's sort of a hodgepodge of, Soma leather scene and country western club.
And this is her fellow performer, Alpha Mulugeta, better known as Honey Mahogany.
You'll meet people who, you know, are dot-comers, people who are homeless, hipsters, people who are hippies, old school San Francisco punk rock scene, just everything.
The Stud has been in the neighborhood since 1966 and was part of the South of Market leather scene at the time. The blocks surrounding West Folsom were a vibrant ecosystem of gay bars and businesses, many of which are gone today. The Stud developed a reputation as a welcoming home for all types of people, including women, which was rare for a gay bar.
The Stud's history speaks directly to our present in a lot of ways, as queers who just want to be together and not just be okay and safe together, but be creative and expressive and explosive together.
Decade after decade, people have come to The Stud for music, dancing, and performances where anything could happen.
And one time this drag queen named Beth Amphetamines rented a car or borrowed a car, and there was this huge parking lot next to The Stud that's now a huge development. And she was lip-syncing while holding onto the top of this car. And it was moments like these that I was like, "Ooh, the nightlife is really important."
But just 6 months ago, it seemed like the end was near for this South of Market landmark. This past July, the owner, Michael McElhaney, gathered the loyal Stud community and told them that the building had been sold. His rent had almost tripled, he was barely hanging on to a month-to-month lease, and after 25 years, it was time to move on. Honey and Vivian were in the crowd that night.
Michael didn't want the stud to die. I mean, he knew how important it was to the community. You know, he wanted to sell to someone in the community so that it could remain the stud and not just, you know, become another brew pub. I remember Vivienne Forevermore turning to me and saying, "So, do you want to buy a bar?"
Over the next few weeks, an idea to save the stud began to spread and take shape. A worker-owned cooperative, the Stud Collective, was born and now has 15 members.
We're a collection of drag queens, burlesque performers, small business entrepreneurs, DJs, bar workers.
On a Tuesday night in early December, the newly formed Stud Collective called a community meeting. Vivienne and Honey addressed 20 or so people anxious to hear about the next steps for the stud.
Hello, hello, hello everyone. We are, my name is Honey Mahogany, this is Vivienne Forevermore, aka Micah Sigourney, and we are two representatives of a 15-member collective called the Stud Collective.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Just a few weeks before this meeting, the Stud Collective landed a major victory by establishing legacy business status from San Francisco's Small Business Commission. The Legacy Business Registry ensures that businesses that are more than 30 years old and have contributed to a neighborhood's history get access to grants in order to stabilize rent.
That actually is, I don't know, for me was really amazing because what it did was it recognized that the Stud Bar is an important part of the fabric of San Francisco, right? We've been here for 50 years and goddammit, we're gonna stay here for 50 more.
Yep.
But legacy business status wasn't the end of the fight. The Stud Collective put in months of work to negotiate a more reasonable rent and a new 2-year lease to keep the stud at its current location.
It was a hard won 2 years, yes, too. We had to scrape and pull for those 2 years.
Tooth and nail.
The Stud Collective took over the lease on New Year's Eve, and they celebrated with an all-out New Year, New Era party. With the goal to keep the stud thriving for another 50 years, the collective is searching for a more permanent home in the quickly changing Soma neighborhood.
We wrote this really cute line. Should we go back to, do you want to read it?
Change is inevitable. You want me to read the whole thing?
Yeah, girl.
It's how we respond to that change that marks us. The Stud Collective will continue the work. With your help, San Francisco, with your help, we can do this.
But for now, the stud remains at its iconic home, working towards its mission to keep San Francisco queer. At the Stud, I'm Meredith Hodnott for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Meredith. Nobody got the sound right this week, but don't despair. We've got a new one for you. Ready? Here we go.
Awesome. Naval oranges right now, all kinds of mandarins, W. Murcott's. We just got in the sumo citrus. Ask the workers what's good. Try things that you've never tried before.
Think you know where that was recorded? Give us a call and tell us. 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We'll tell you the story behind the sound next Thursday. Until then, thanks so much for listening and thanks for playing. I'm Julie King.
And that's all for us today. Our team includes Josiah Luis Aldorete, Lila Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Nicole Grigg, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Greer McVeigh, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Musica Pacifica. They'll be playing in their hometown of San Francisco Sunday afternoon at the Noe Valley Ministry on Sanchez Street. Their program of Baroque compositions begins at 4 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.